Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and happy Labor Day, everyone, and we hope that you're enjoying this beautiful late summer day, whether you're at the beach, at home with families, or maybe even at work. So let's begin with Labor Day and President Barack Obama's address to the annual Labor Day breakfast right here in Boston. The president, wearing a blue-collar shirt, came to tout his administration's economic record, to push what he calls middle-class economics, and to salute the power of unions.
They're the ones who gave us the 40-hour work week. They're the ones who gave us overtime and the minimum wage and all kinds of things that folks now take for granted. It was those fights that gave us health insurance and Social Security and Medicare and retirement plans. All those gains are union-made. They're stamped with the union label. They're what we celebrate today.
Today, President Obama signed an executive order expanding the right to paid sick leave for federal contractors. The U.S. is the only developed country in the world without a paid sick leave policy, and 44 million American workers don't have access to any paid sick days at all. So the president's executive order makes a dent in that, giving about 300,000 workers up to 7 paid sick days a year. It's his latest effort to nudge his agenda forward despite political resistance in Washington.
Only 12% of our private sector workers have access to paid family leave. We got millions of people who can't care for a loved one with a serious illness without losing a paycheck or risking their job. And there's a good proposal out there, the Family Act, that would deal with some of these issues. I'm calling on Congress, take a cue from the rest of the world, work together in a bipartisan fashion. Find a way to make paid leave, paid family and medical leave a reality for all Americans. That's something we should be doing.
The president's speech in Boston is a reminder that Labor Day is more than just a summer-ending holiday. It's supposed to be a celebration of the U.S. labor movement, even if that movement has lost a lot of steam in recent decades. At the height of their power in the 1950s, unions represented about one-third of all American workers. One-third. Today, unions represent just 1 in 9 workers, and that number is falling. Jim Green is someone who knows a lot about the American labor movement. He's professor emeritus of history and labor studies at UMass Boston, and he's with us. And thanks for coming in, and happy Labor Day, Jim Green.
Happy Labor Day to you, Anthony. It's nice to be here today.
Well, it's good to have you. So what's the significance of the president making the trip to Boston on this day to talk about paid sick leave, organized labor, and middle-class economics?
I think it's an acknowledgement of the historic role that Massachusetts has played, particularly recently, in enacting a referendum for paid sick leave. And I think he knows his history. He studied law school here. He knows that this has been a place where historic breakthroughs have occurred. You know, maybe he's looking over his shoulder a little bit at Elizabeth Warren and all the fights they've had over free trade. And this is a way of saying, look at all I've done, too. You know, and there have been real advances in recent years through National Labor Relations Board decisions from his appointees and from executive actions that he deserves credit for, and he was taking it today.
So take us back to the early days of this holiday, because you wrote a great piece for WBUR's Cognoscenti opinion page today, recalling a Labor Day celebration in Boston back in 1887. Give us a sense of what it was like then, how the holiday was celebrated and marked.
Yeah, the very first Labor Day that year was, the Globe called it a joyous pageant of celebration, and thousands of Bostonians came out in a joyous sort of salute to these people. But it was the Gilded Age, and Americans really did appreciate the honest toil that working people produced and thought, as Obama kept using over and over again, workers deserved a fair shake. But way beyond that, that they were the backbone of the republic in the city, monopolists and speculators and lawyers and so very, very unpopular. And the honest working person, in those days they would have said working man probably, was saluted, and the unions represented that dignity and pride. And I think you still see some of that today, but without the huge public manifestation of that, of people in the streets. You know, this may be a time when not only the spirit of Labor Day, but the labor movement itself is going to show signs of revival. It looks like that might be the case.
And what makes you say that? Because we mentioned the diminishing number of workers represented by unions, but it sounds like you're a little bit more sanguine about your assessment of the labor movement.
Yeah, I'm sanguine because I was just reading an editorial in the Wall Street Journal the other day by a pro-business Republican appointee of the National Labor Relations Board, now an attorney, who's very worried about a number of things that the National Labor Relations Board has done to make it easier for unions to go for quick elections. Because the longer you wait before you file for an election, the longer the employer has to call captive meetings and try to talk people out of it, and people get fired, and they say, we're going to move this store if you don't. So the sooner the better from the union's point of view. And he says this rule change is expected to lead to even higher union win rates. They are already winning over 60% of the elections. Now, that may be an eye-opener to some people. But
And yet, one of the things that the president was talking about this morning in Boston was what he called the sort of constant war on unions. So that's still there as well.
Oh, it is. And I think if this sort of slow kind of defense process that's been going on through Obama's executive orders and the NLRB decisions doesn't continue, and that it wouldn't if the Republicans, if Republican wins the White House, it'll all go backwards again.
Senator Elizabeth Warren was also at the Labor Day breakfast this morning, and she said it's no ordinary Labor Day celebration when real wages haven't budged in decades. So I'm curious, to what extent do you think the diminishing power and influence of unions contributes to the flattening of American wages?
You and I both looked at this graph that appeared in the Globe the other day about the direct opposite trends of union membership dropping from 1955 around 29% to 11% today, while the share of the income going to the top 10 goes from 29 to 47. But that's not the whole story. The union contract has been since the 30s, since the Great Depression, which is why all these laws were passed to try to pull the country out of the Depression, has been the nation's number one anti-poverty strategy. And so without that influence, there's just very little way for workers to leverage wage increases.
There has been, of course, persistent criticism of the labor unions, and the critics would say that it's just coincidence that union membership has dropped as wages have flattened. And they'll point out unionization is often the source of higher costs for businesses and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's true. What your compensation is, if it's negotiated, is probably going to be almost always better than without a collective voice. There's always this debate, for example, about raising the minimum wage, and small employers say this is going to take us out of business. And
right.
I mean, my reading of The Economist is this is not true, but I am not an economist, so I can't claim to be an expert on that. The younger workers are the ones whose wages are falling behind the most, and they're also the ones who are most favorable toward unions. That number is going up as well. So there's things in the wind in the future that look somewhat more promising, and I would have to say, I've been lecturing at the Harvard Trade Union Program in the law school for 25 years, and the quality of people who are now leading unions and representing unions are really, really some of the smartest people in the country. And I was very pleased to see the president repeating something that point I was trying to make in my post today was about the dignity of labor, and that this isn't just about being able to buy more groceries. You know, it's about how your wage reflects your value, about how people are treated on the job. I mean, President Obama kept bringing that up about the dignity of work and working people.
Well, interesting day in Boston this Labor Day. That's Jim Green, Professor Emeritus of History and Labor Studies at UMass Boston. He's also the author of The Devil Is Here in These Hills, A History of West Virginia Coal Miners. And you can find a link to his Cognoscenti piece about Labor Day at radioboston.org. Jim Green, thanks so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure, and happy Labor Day to you and everybody else.
And happy Labor Day to you. And stay with us. Coming up, unschooling, a Vermont couple's decision that the best classroom for their two sons is home on the farm. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.